Everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are rethinking the future of customer relationships. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Amy Rath.
And we are going to have a fantastic conversation today. So Amy, let's get right into it. What is your hot take?
Yes, I believe that what we are currently calling scaled customer success absolutely is not customer success, and we need to thoroughly redefine it. Otherwise, we're introducing all kinds of risk internally and to our customers.
Oh my God, them fighting words, Amy. I cannot wait to get into this conversation because I've had people on the show before that, you know, their job title is Director of Scaled Customer Success. So let's get into that. Tell us a little bit more. Why is scaled CS not CS in not your CS. Hot take?
Absolutely. So it is a vital function. Absolutely. So I don't want to take anything away from the fact that it should exist. It is important, et cetera, et cetera. However, when we think about customer success, and again, it is absolutely vital to the organization, but a lot of the skills that go into that high touch strategic model where you need to be able to work with high level executives, you are meeting with them frequently. You are keeping a real pulse on them. And you typically have a smaller set of clients because they are so high touch. Very different skills when we're talking about tens. And I've even heard in some cases, hundreds of clients to a single resource, where really what you're doing is you're protecting the renewal more than anything else. Also, you can be driving growth to some extent. Very different skill sets. And I think that it deserves its own title.
It's so funny that you say that because I did an episode, oh God, it was probably like 30 episodes ago now. And we talked about the idea that like CS has a branding problem and that it's become so many things over the years that the brand of what customer success really should be has become muddled because, okay, are you glorified customer service managers? Mm-hmm. Are you just reps? Are you salespeople? Are you, you know, what are you? And no one can really answer that question satisfactorily. And if we can't answer it ourselves, then how can we expect people we work with to know who we are, what we do, and what value we bring to the table?
I love that take. I think you are so accurate. I think it still speaks to a bit of an issue that the customer success team often faces, although I think things have improved a lot over the last several years. I have been in this space since before we even called it customer success. It was just, we need to do something to keep these clients around, and it's not quite project management, it's not quite sales, so go figure it out. My first title ever was solutions specialist because they were like, you help support the solution and you're a junior person and we'll figure it out as we go along. But I completely agree. I think that there are many different ways of interacting with many different types of customers. And to your point, if we can't define what you need to do and the skills that we're looking for, and that rolls all the way up to how it gets managed, what the goals are, then how can we expect to be successful? And we're probably wasting a lot of time in the process trying to figure things out.
Well, and I feel like I hear a lot of people burning out in customer success roles, and it's probably an expectations management issue, right? Because if you aren't defining success, then how will you ever know if you're successful, and how will you ever be able to be compensated for that success if nobody knows what good looks like?
Right. Very good point. Or if it's kind of the round peg in the square hole theory, where let's say that you're somebody who is just excellent at being organized and handling a very heavy workflow and getting in, getting things done. You want to cross things off your list. That could be somebody who absolutely thrives in, again, what is currently called the scaled environment. I don't want to form deep relationships with anyone. I want to do what I need to do. I want to make sure that I am, you know, communicating things using a very templatized process, probably being pretty tech heavy. That is very different. And to your point, they could burn out if you're like, all right, now go in front of this VP and talk about why they can't live without us. You're talking about two very different people there.
There's also a trend that I'm seeing in the space where, you know, you mentioned that some people have hundreds of accounts that they're mm-hmm. responsible for. And I've seen that as well. I've also had, you know, people talk about they're doing a pooled model where like a group of people share a group of accounts based on some segmentation, or it's truly no dedicated manager. Like if you want someone, you're just going through the channel and whoever's available is available. So what do you think, if we're thinking about about, we'll call them old, like true customer success, where you are in the weeds with these people, you know them, you understand them, you have conversations. If you saw each other on the street, you'd cross each other across the street, right, to say hello to each other, mm-hmm, versus the scaled, because I do agree those are different skill sets. The ability to mass communicate versus emotionally connect, those are different things.
They are.
So what does it look like to be good at the high touch? Mm-hmm. And what does it look like to be good at the scaled approach?
I think that's a fantastic question. So I think the high touch person needs to, and I'm going to echo your word, emotionally invest in those customers. Their success is your success. You need to understand their business thoroughly. You need to understand why they are working with you versus any competitor that is out there. You need to be not just communicating based on some random calendar schedule, but to make sure that you are proactively addressing issues as they come up, that you are protecting that account. And you're probably doing a lot of relationship management internally at the company you work for as well, where you're connecting them with product, you're connecting them with sales, maybe you're escalating things upward. It is a very relationship-driven type of skill set. And again, likely working with a smaller client base because you just, there's only so many hours in the day versus, and I've tried to play around with a couple titles. I'm like, is it a customer renewal specialist? Is it a renewals and retention manager? Like, what do we call this other entity that really is working with scaled and a large book of business? There you are. You have to manage your time. You have so many accounts that you really can't afford to emotionally invest in any of them. You need to have a very quick 30-second sort of elevator pitch down describing the value. And you need to get, I would say, more comfortable with change because the NRR metrics are going to be completely different. You're likely dealing with levels of churn that would make somebody pass out on the other side of the scale where we can't afford to lose one or two customers. Again, we're talking about different skills. And that's not to say that a single resource at a small organization couldn't handle all of that. But I think going back to one of your original points, we have to realize they're doing a lot of different types of customer success in that model, as opposed to really focusing on just one type of client or the other.
This might not be at all right, but I don't come from the customer success world. I come from the sales side of the house. So I've always existed on like the other side of the table when it comes to the deal. I go out, I sell it, I convince people to buy whatever I'm selling, and then, you know, I kind of go away once that has happened. But I'm fascinated by what it takes to grow a company, which in my view is sales is great. And as a seller, I can say that. But I'm only as good as the deal that I brought in yesterday, whereas like to grow, mm-hmm, we have to maintain. And so it occurs to me that when you talk about high touch, that feels very like the same type of skills you need to be a good seller. You need to be able to build relationships, build rapport, communicate across different groups of people. Very relationship heavy. And it feels to me like the person who's good at the scale side of the conversation maybe is more aligned to the types of skills you would need if you were going to do marketing, right? Because you're delivering for the majority, but not the individual, right? You're telling a story that speaks to most of your customers, but not directly to any one person. You're tech heavy. It's more mass communication versus, mm-hmm, sales, which tends to be more personal communication.
I love that take. I had never thought about the marketing equivalent, but I think about the sales link often. I mean, I love salespeople, particularly the questions that I hear sales folks ask. I feel like I'm always behind them, like literally with a pen and a little notebook, writing things down. Because to your point,
good salespeople.
You need to be speaking the same language, literally asking some of the same questions. What's important to you? What's keeping you up at night? Has the mandate changed now that you have a new leader? Those things that I don't think customer success people get taught, but I feel like there's a way that sales folks either naturally know that or there's specific sales selling that helps develop those skills. And if you're going into enterprise customer success, you absolutely need to be asking those types of questions because you should be growing accounts, not just protecting them, but you should be farming and listening for those upcoming opportunities as well. Whether you close that or sales close that is an entirely different conversation. You don't get that chance really if you're working with the marketing side of things. I think that is a fantastic simile.
It's so funny that you talk about like CS doesn't necessarily ask those same questions or is not thinking about that. I think it's wholly a product of the training and opportunities that we as sellers get. So I did a consulting project where I was brought in to help a huge enterprise do, they were changing their sales methodology, the one that they wanted to have everyone follow. And it was like a ton of sellers, a huge investment, millions of dollars to do this project. And we were training sellers, account managers, those kinds of people. And I came across someone who had a customer experience, customer success type role. And I said, oh, have you had an opportunity to go to these workshops and do these trainings? And she had no idea what I was talking about.
No.
Even though she's part of the customer lifecycle, even though she rolls up to their chief revenue officer, she was not afforded the same opportunity to develop those skills. She wasn't even, not even an afterthought, not a thought at all about her role being a part of this conversation.
Why would you need that, right? So I've been a customer success leader for a number of years, and something I will frequently tell folks is they being the customer, don't care about the feature. They don't care about the feature. You're tying it to how it makes their life better. And I do think there's often, I work in SaaS B2B, we want to make sure that you have some technology aptitude, you know? So that is something that gets checked for in the hiring process. And then if anything, they'll be training on product expansion, new features that come out, and so on. But the customer doesn't care. They really just don't. Explain to me why this is valuable, why I need this, which sales, to your point, so much goes into that. Marketing as well. You know, this is the new shiny thing. This is how you're going to use it. But if you can't depend on a customer success person in either model to truly be successful, if you're not thinking about making sure they can develop those skills as well. Yes, the technology is cool and shiny and exciting, but the customer doesn't care. They want to know, what does this mean to me? How is this going to make my life easier?
And it feels like a real opportunity for customer success to almost sit at the intersection of like what this means for you and this cool new thing that we offered, and being able to make that connection for customers in a way that really sales and marketing doesn't have the opportunity. Marketing never really gets to talk to them.
Right.
Sales is really focused on the next deal because, you know, they're quarterly based, and if they don't make their quota, then they're in trouble, right? So they're not really focused on reconnecting back. So how can we as customer success professionals, people who sit at that kind of like in that real CS role, and let's talk about specifically the one-to-one, the true CS role, right, not the scale. How do we develop the skills to be able to successfully connect what it means for our customer and the features that we are trying to push out or get adoption on?
Absolutely. I think that is really the key question. I think, and I wouldn't put it past any good CS person to get a little bit scrappy and take this on their own. But specifically, if you are a leader, work on building that bridge. So product is likely releasing product notes on whatever the feature is. Sales is going to have some kind of support as well, because they also have to talk about the new feature. Get your hands on those and start tying those together. Write your own script. Talk to some of those, you know, strategic enterprise level CSMs to say, what does our biggest client care about? What does your biggest client care about? What problems have they expressed so that I can try to tie that into the narrative? So that when we go to market with this, when you are, you know, upselling, driving adoption, you can put it in a language that means something to the client. I think it really is incumbent on CS leaders to do that. And the good news is, like you said, some of the resources are already in place. You've just got to put your own script together to help your team.
One of the things that I feel like is hard with customer success, as again, as someone who's lives more on the sales side of the house, is it doesn't seem like those teams get the credit that they deserve for the work that they do, right? So sales, we have booked deals. We know if we're doing a good job, we say, okay, yes, we brought in this amount of revenue and our goal was that and we did it, right? Marketing has leads, you know, okay, we need to bring in this many qualified leads and we know that we did it. So how does customer success get the same level of of credit for the value that they bring to their company and the growth that they are driving.
Oh, I could talk about that for an entire podcast. And let me go ahead and make my answer succinct. So there are definitely hard numbers associated with it. There's churn, there's ARR, which tends to be a little bit more on the sales side. But then there's the protection, which is the recurring revenue retention and making sure that we're measured for that. But then there's also underlying behaviors that drive that. And that can be simple things like, how often are you speaking to those particular customers, the high dollar ones? Is there a strategy in place for small and medium business in order to make sure you're connecting with them? What is the quality of conversation that you're having? Can you identify whether a customer is at risk or not and tell me why? I think that once we're able to talk about those particular behaviors that we're expecting to see, we can tie those to some meaningful hard numbers, because you're never going to go to a senior executive and say, you know, she was proactive. What on earth does that mean? But, oh, we were able to get ahead of some really big risk that was occurring because we heard that a senior leader was leaving, or a merger and acquisition was off in the wings, or a new type of software had been introduced within the organization. If you've got that solid relationship, your client should be forthcoming about that as much as they're able to, and then drive that towards something like revenue protection, risk mitigation. Those are things that are really important and that the CS team is absolutely handling.
So if I am a leader of an organization and we are at that tipping point where we can no longer one-to-one serve our customers in the way that we have so far, right? Or we're at that point where we're trying to implement a more scaled approach. What is the one thing you would have them do first to do this the right way, so we don't end up with people who have titles that don't make any sense or expectations that don't really meet the moment?
That is a fantastic question. Number one, set whatever your threshold is for what you are calling scale, whether it's size of agreement, growth potential, recurring, whatever that means to you, set that threshold. And as a part of that, what is the risk you are willing to tolerate? Because you are not likely to retain 100%. What is your threshold? And the first time out, you might get it wrong. You might have to adjust it. That is completely fine. Without knowing what those parameters are, everything else is going to be spinning a wheel of futility, because you're not going to know what good looks like. Those would be steps one and two, and then manage from there.
I love that you pointed out your risk, like how far you are willing to go down that risk, because I think a lot of people go into it with like, oh, well, this will work perfectly and it'll be great and we'll keep all of these customers and then
it'll be fine. Yes.
And it'll be fine. But you have to decide how much you're willing to risk, because that is a huge decision point in the process. But the other thing that you said that I want to just like double click on, you said like, and you know, you might get it wrong. I would go even further and say it will be wrong. The first time you do it,
honestly,
it will be.
Yes. Yes. You will probably need to adjust it. A first step is better than no step. So we did the best we could with the information we had. Build in that adjustment period. Hey, this is what it's going to look like for the next 6, 12, 18 months. Then we will revisit. And if even that time frame doesn't seem to be correct because suddenly you're bleeding customers, okay, fix it faster, right? Wasn't it Netflix? Like someone had make mistakes and fail or fail fast. Like it's not a bad philosophy.
No. And as long as you understand and make the conscious decision that like, okay, we're probably going to lose some customers here, because nothing is worse than when they say like, oh yeah, well, we're probably going to lose some customers here, but they don't believe it. And then when it actually starts to happen, they panic. And then it's everyone below them's fault for not executing it right. When in reality, this is how it works. And this is what transition looks like. And it's okay. You're going to lose some people, but you'll probably gain more in efficiency or pick up new customers because you figure it out.
Right, exactly. You can set expectations with those customers ahead of time. You don't need to get the VP of, you know, customers or the COO in there trying to save $2,500 accounts if in the grand scheme of things, that's not a good use of their time.
And isn't it wild how often that happens though?
Yes.
Like I have seen big time people who are, you know, just by coming to the meeting, they changed the billable hour of that meeting, you know, quadrupled it. And I'm like, what are you doing here? This is such a waste of your time. Like, you do not need to be here. And also, you're probably not helpful in this
current exactly.
situation.
We're going to go through all this and maybe we'll retain this person for this account for another 12 months. And then they're going to leave anyway. And you should have been spending your time elsewhere. Right.
Right.
It is scary to say we might lose some customers, but if we're moving into that model, I mean, even in the enterprise model, you might lose some customers. Unfortunately, that happens, but that's why we've got the customer success team. That's literally why the team was stood up and it exists. Figure out the risk. I know it's scary. Figure out what you're willing to tolerate, and nothing is set in stone. We can always revisit, recalibrate, et cetera.
What do you think is people's biggest blind spot when it comes to customer success?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. I think honestly, it's really truly understanding the skills that are needed in order to be successful. And as we've talked about, it can look a lot of different ways based on the industry you're in, the size of the clients you're working with, exactly what your organization does, because we haven't even gotten into an organization where literally a company needs an ERP, right? They really can't exist without it, versus some, it's a nice to have. Yes, it feels necessary, but can you go about your day without necessarily having this? In which case you're doing a lot of educating the market and constantly proving your value, which is a song that not everybody learns how to sing. So I think the biggest blind spot is understanding that skill set. And then I think to an earlier point you made, let's get loud about it. Let's be proud of what we do. Organizations wouldn't exist without successful customer success people, hands down, and sales as well. Obviously, you need the sales too, but they're two sides of, you know, if you draw a spectrum, you know, they kind of both fit in there very, very comfortably.
And thinking about all of the incredible people that you've had a chance to meet or that you aspire to know, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we think about customer success?
That is a great question. So I'm going to go a little off of the customer success rails. There's a book that I'm reading right now. It's fairly new, but it is brand new to me. It's called Traction. For folks that aren't familiar with it, it's by Gino Wickman. It's really written for entrepreneurial systems. But if you've led a customer success team, you are an entrepreneur. You have your own business. You have your own setup. You have your own values. And it really ties in nicely to what we were just talking about. Know your skill set. Know your core values. Know the risk that you are willing to tolerate. All of that is baked into the book. Again, it's called Traction. I want to put it in the hands of every CS person, to be completely honest, because you're going to have to think about yourself like a business, which you are. You are a part of a business. We're not just doing this because we like people. You have to think about backing things up with things like values, hard metrics. So again, I know that is not new, but in the couple weeks that I've started reading this, it has really clarified a lot of things for me. So that is my recommendation.
I read that book a couple of years ago because I'm an entrepreneur, so I love all of that kind of stuff. And it was truly one of the first business books, nonfiction books, whatever you want to call it, that I read multiple times and felt like I got different things out of it each time I went through it and I listened to the audiobook. It is a great book for anybody who exists inside of a business because it's not really just for entrepreneurs. So it is definitely a great book. I will double click, double plus one for that book. I will also recommend The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni.
Okay.
It is very similar and he tells everything in like fable style. So it's like real characters. It feels like a fiction book, but it's a business concept set in that way. So Patrick Lencioni is my, if Traction is the gateway, Patrick Lencioni comes right after that. So
definitely
fantastic. Check out that one. It's a really, really good story. And it's for leaders who are trying to figure out, how do you take your team from good to great? How do you take them from a high functioning team who, you know, kind of does the work to the team everybody wants to be?
I love it. I love getting recommendations. That sounds perfect. I'm literally writing it down right now. Thank you.
And if someone is connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to have a conversation, or they just want to follow along with what you're working on, where can they find you online?
Absolutely. It's really easy. I'm just on LinkedIn. So it's Amy Rath, R-A-T-H. But yes, please reach out. I'm always looking for new connections. Always looking to thought share. And I'm a lifelong learner, very dedicated to it. So please, I would love to hear from folks.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. This was a really exciting, invigorating conversation.
Thank you so much, Alyssa. I was so happy to be here.